Okay, Parashat Emor, let's hope we do a little bit better than that. Let's look at the very beginning of the Sedra. The beginning of the Sedra deals with mitzvot to do with the Kohanim. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, Emor el Kohanim b'nei Aharon, speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aharon, va'amarta lehem, and say to them, l'nefesh lo yitamar ba'amav, that the Kohen shouldn't become tamei to any soul amongst his people. Now, there are two phrases that I want us to hone in on. One is the phrase, Emor el ha-Kohanim b'nei Aharon va'amarta alehem. That's an unusual formulation. Sometimes you have daber and va'amarta. But to have Emor and va'amarta is unusual. And the second, which I want to actually deal with first, is the end of the pasuk, l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav, which I translated as a kohen shouldn't become tamei to a soul amongst his people. Well, that's a little bit clumsy. What does it mean, not to become tamei to a soul amongst his people? So I want to show you three different approaches there in the classical mefarshim. Rashi explains, lo yitama ba'amav, Bo'od shehameit betoch amav. That means, whilst the dead person, the deceased, is still amongst his people, yatzah meit mitzvah. That excludes a meit mitzvah. What's a meit mitzvah? A meit mitzvah is a deceased person that's got nobody there to bury him. So what Rashi is saying is that if the dead person is within society, so then the kohen can't become tamei to him. But if it's a meit mitzvah, meaning you're just walking along the road, you're on a plane, whatever it is. You're on a plane, you can't get off the plane. But you're somewhere, there's a dead person, needs burying, there's nobody else to take care of it, then the Kohen, in that case, does defile himself, does become impure. So it's the nefesh lo yitama. But a kohen doesn't become tamei to a person, but amav, whilst he's still amongst his people. But if the dead person is not amongst his people, he's been abandoned, there's nobody else who's going to take care of burying him, then the kohen does become tamei. So that's Rashi's interpretation. Sforno has a different interpretation. L'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav, shum echad me'er kohenim lo yitama l'nefesh ba'amav. So no Kohen should become Tamei to a soul amongst its people. Shehu kol meit min hehamon. That means any dead person from the proletariat. She'eino krovo, meaning that's not a relative of the Kohen. Elashu me'amor bilvad. It's just, you know, he's another Jew. That's me'amav. That's ba'amav, me'amor, whatever you want, however you want to say it. That's, so reading it, l'nefesh lo yitama, he shouldn't become tamei to a soul, ba'amav, a soul amongst his people, a soul from a Jewish person. Don't become tamei to a Jewish person unless it's one of your close relatives, and that's what the pasuk goes on to say. The Sforno has understood this as being sort of exclusive, meaning telling us the cases when you can't become tamei. You can't become tamei. That's if it is that ba'amav, if it's just a regular person. The Ralbag suggests to us that it actually is telling us circumstances under which you can become tamei. L'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav, magid, it teaches us, she'ein tumat meit nor heget bagoyim. That tumat meit, that's the tumah which is contracted from a dead person, doesn't apply to non-Jews, to Gentile corpses. Now, in actual fact, we don't paskin that way at all. That's a way of reading it. So he's saying, the nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. Ba'amav means you can't become tamei to a dead person amongst your people. If the dead person isn't from amongst your people, then you can become tamei for them. So if it's a non-Jew, the Ralbag holds that you can become tamei. I see that Tal as a Kohen is getting perplexed by that already. So first of all, we don't paskin that way at all. A Kohen can't come into contact with a non-Jewish corpse. There is a question about whether Tumat Ohel applies to a non-Jewish corpse, meaning that can a Kohen be in the same room as a non-Jewish corpse without actually touching the corpse? That's a further question. And there are two opinions in the Rishonim, both of which find expression in the Shulchan Aruch. Basically, we say that the Chatchila Kohen shouldn't become Tameh to a non-Jewish corpse, but if it's pressing circumstances, then they can. A few years ago, I had a question somebody here in the shul asked me. Their office was in a building where there was also a dentist surgery, and the dentist surgery had a skeleton. I'm not sure if it was a full skeleton or just a... I think it was a full skeleton. It was a full skeleton. So, yes, that's a full skeleton there, and it wasn't a plastic mock-up. So did they have a problem being in the same building as the skeleton? So because this was for their Parnassa, that wasn't a problem. So we tend to be more machmir, you know, that's the question always comes up, you know, going into the British Museum and things like that. Judith ask me a question? Yeah.
Whether it applied to my son under the age of Bar Mitzvah.
That's right. So it does, and we learn it out from this pasuk as well, right? Because how do we learn it out from this pasuk? That leads us seamlessly onto the next point. I know you've got a question. But how do we darshan emor el akhanim bnei aron va'amar talehem? So you haven't got the Rashi there in front of you, but Rashi and indeed the Gemara darshans it out. That's emor va'amarta lahashir gedolim al haktanim. That to tell the adults that they have to make sure that their children don't become tamei. Emor, so that's emor el hakohanim, speak to the kohanim, v'amarta alehem, so it's the first emor is just telling the kohanim not to become tamei, v'amarta alehem, and say to them that they shouldn't let their children become tamei. And this is one of the sources that we learn out, generally speaking, with regard to mitzvot, that a parent or an adult is not allowed to let their child do something which is asur. Certainly not actively do something for them, which is asur. There's a whole range of questions. You know, you see a child eating treif, right? So nobody's allowed to feed the child treif. What if you see the child eating treif? So generally speaking, we say the parents have to stop the child from eating treif. Other people don't. Nobody's allowed to feed. I'm not allowed to feed your kids treif. Partly because most of you, your kids are adults. If your kids are young, I can't feed your kids treif. If I see them eating treif, whether or not I've got an obligation to stop them, you might want me to stop them eating treif. Whether or not I've got an obligation is a question. But certainly, the parents can't, or nobody can actively give them something which is asur, is learnt out from this pasuk. Tal, you had a question.
Do you interpret the Ralbag as saying that Tumat make no hakim bagoyim? Is he talking specifically about Kohanim, or is he saying it as a generic thing for all of Bnei Yisrael? I don't understand how he manages to make... If it's just for the Kohanim, I can sort of see why he would say that. If it's for the whole of Bnei Yisrael, I don't know how he makes that.
Well, no, because I've just taken one line from a paragraph there, but he makes the point that... that it's only essentially, and this is the whole notion of, you know, of tum and tara, that it's only something which has got a high spiritual level which can become defiled. Something which has a par of or low spiritual level, then the notion of tumma doesn't apply to it. So he maintains, at least according to, I mean, it's not in accordance with halakha this, so that's presumably he's just learning this as a drasha on the on the pasuk. I don't think he's coming to argue with the halakha, but at least in terms of his way of learning the pshat, it's that goyim don't have kedusha like a Jew does. Therefore, if they don't have kedusha, they don't have tumah either. You don't. There's no such. It's not just that a kohen is allowed to become tameh to a goy. He seems to hold, but yeah, there's goyim don't make you tameh. You can pick up a goyish corpse. It won't make you tummy. In any event, let's look a little bit more at this better, more of our Amarta, and see something very lovely Chatam Sofer has to say. More of our Amarta, Katav Ramban, Kumor Daber Abnei Yisrael Amarta. It's much the same as, you know, not infrequently do you have Daber Abnei Yisrael Amarta Lehem. Speak to them and say to them. And why do you have speak to them and say to them? Wherever you want to emphasize something, you know, it says it in a more emphatic way. Say to them and tell them. So things that they might have done naturally, their inclination would have been to do them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to stop them doing it. So you have to tell them, you know, you have to be very emphatic about telling them not to do it. That's why you not infrequently have a double expression introducing something of that nature. So our question is why is it so important to tell the Kohanim to emphasize for the Kohanim that they mustn't become tamei? Right? Why do you need lahazir bimod ma'od? I just say, don't become tamei. I understand certain things, like an inclination to do avodah zarah, an inclination to commit sexual acts which are prohibited. You need to tell the people bimod ma'od very much not to do it. But why is there such emphasis on telling the kohanim not to become tamei? Tzarich lomar b'kohanim nami hayu me'olam anashim tzadikim. So the kohanim, as descendants, I'm adding in, but he essentially says this, as descendants of Aaron HaKohen, right, they were righteous people, regilim bigmilut chesed, and they were kind people. As you know, the Kohanim, they were the supreme tribe, if you like. They were religiously superior. So they weren't just, didn't just daven to Hashem, but they did gemilut chesedim. Kvurat meitim, they would bury the dead, vehespedam, and do hespedim. Till they would even, you know, tear themselves and cut themselves. That's in their distress about the dead. Therefore, they had to be warned off it very emphatically. They shouldn't become tamei to corpses that aren't their relatives and aren't a mate mitzvah. So they shouldn't scratch themselves or cut themselves. That's because of the dead. So the Chatam Sofer is saying is that his question was, why does it have to say in this case that's be emphatic about not coming into contact with the dead? And his answer is because, in actual fact, Kohanim as gomle chasadim, as kind, thoughtful people, which is what we would want from the people who serve on our behalf in the Beit HaMikdash, then the natural inclination would be, you know, the first to volunteer to be on the Chevra Kedisha. Therefore, you have to tell them, listen, everybody's got their limitations, and you can man the hotline, but you can't actually be on the Chevra Kedisha. Now, it's worth just looking a few verses in that we're told about the Kohanim, the Kidashto, you shall sanctify the Kohen, Kiet Lechem Elohecha Hu Makriv, because he's serving up the meals for your God, Kadosh Yelach, and the Kohen will be holy for you, Ki Kadosh Ani Adonai Mikadoshchem, because I am holy, says Hashem, who makes you holy. Now, the pasuk here is telling us clearly that, you know, the Kohen doesn't have any independent Kedusha. He gets his Kedusha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we've got this mitzvah of the Kiddushto, and it's worth noting that this is a mitzvah. Look at what Rashi says for Kiddushto, Al Korcho. Even if he doesn't want to be a Kohen. If, let's say, a Kohen has married a woman to whom he's not allowed to be married, if he doesn't want to divorce her, Halkehu v'yisrehu ad sheyigaresh. You beat him and punish him until he agrees to divorce her. So it's not optional. Sometimes people think sometimes comes up in practical rabbinics that you'll have somebody who's a Kohen who wants to marry a, usually it's a grusha. That's a divorced woman. Happens sometimes. Mainly it actually happens with older. You know, old might be a second marriage or something like that. That's it's sometimes difficult for a you know person in their 50s, 60s to find a partner. And a kohen finds a woman who's a divorcee. That's they want to get married. And, of course, they can't. So the first question they ask the rabbi is, well, can I renounce my kahuna? That's, in the royal family, you can, you know, renounce your right to the throne. So can I renounce my right to the kahuna? And the answer is, of course, not. You can't. And that's what this pasuk is telling us. And if he doesn't want to behave like a kohen, you have to bully him into behaving like a kohen. However, there's a flip side as well. Kadosh yelach, nahug bo kodesh. You treat a kohen as if he's got some kedusha. Liftach rishon b'chol davar, levarech rishon b'seuda. He comes first in all matters. He gets to say the bracha first at a seuda. What does it mean that he comes first in everything? It doesn't mean to say if you're playing Monopoly on a Motzei Shabbat that the Kohen gets to choose the top hat and roll the dice first. So we're talking about in matters of Kedusha, matters of sanctity. So, you know, something in Shul, the Kohen gets first privilege to, which is, of course, what we do. We give, the Kohen gets the first Aliyah, and that's a mitzvah of the Kiddushto. So there are all sorts of discussions that people might well be familiar with. What do you do if you've got three yahrzeits in shul on a Monday morning? Do you still give the kohen the first aliyah? So many poskim say that yes, you do have to. That's certainly what the Mishnah Brura says. Others say that in actual fact the kohen can forego his aliyah on a weekday. It's really only on Shabbat when shul is full that he can't forego his aliyah. So others say no, but the kohen should step out of shul, and then that helps. But those are questions that come up. Another question that comes up is, does a kohen? The Gemara discusses this and the Rishonim. If you've got a kohen am haaretz and a non kohen who's a tamid chacham, who takes precedence? Is it that the kohen takes precedence only when there's a level playing field? No, in all cases that the kohen takes precedence. So the maskan of the poskim seems to be that the kohen takes precedence only if it's a level playing field. But if you've got a Yisrael who's a Talmid Chacham, so then it doesn't. But the minhag always is that you always call a kohen up first. The Mishnah Brura says, but you should be, if you've got the chief rabbi, right, in shul, you should try and make sure that the kohen that you call up isn't a total am haaretz. He doesn't need to be a Talmid Chacham, but, you don't want to call up as your kohen, a kohen who can barely read the brachot, because that might be against the din, because there you're giving a kohen am haaretz precedence over a Talmid Chacham. If the kohen, knows a bit, that's okay, so he's not able to pasken in all four sections of Shulchan Aruch, but that's fine. So that's what we would try to do. That's
So where did the minhag come for things like, not getting a kohen to do something for
okay, now that's also part of it. That's also brought down in Shulchan Aruch that you mustn't get a kohen to do to serve you in any way. He can be mochel, that you can forgive your kavod in that regard. But if there's a pile of chairs to be slapped or something like that in shul, we don't turn around to the kohen and say, slap the chairs. The kohen wants to lend a shoulder like everybody else, then that's fine. But that's part of the mitzvah of the kiddushto. So we've got lots of mitzvot there towards the beginning of the sedra to do with the kohuna, and then in the second perek, we've got lots of mitzvot to do with the sacrifices, with the korbanot, and particularly things that will make a sacrifice or an animal invalid for a korban. So if it's got a blemish or something of that nature, it's going to be invalid as a korban. And then at the very end of the section dealing with korbanot, we've got a strange pasuk. It's not strange in itself, but it's strange in its context. After the korbanot, we've got a pasuk shemartem mitzvotai vasitem otam ani Adonai. You shall observe my mitzvot, and you shall do them. I am Hashem. And then, immediately after that, we have the Parshat HaMoadot, the parsha which deals with all the Chagim. Almost immediately after that. That's the next paragraph. Now, most of the Mefarshim understand that Shemartem Mitzvotai Vasitem Otam Ani Hashem is a conclusion to the parasha of the Korbanot. I mean, if you look at it in the Chumash, here you've got, a couple of pages, one, two, three pages dealing with the Korbanot. You've got this pasuk, Shemartem Mitzvotai, you shall observe my commandments and do them there at the very end. And then there we've got new paragraph dealing with the Moadim, dealing with the festivals. So it's obvious to everybody except the Natsiv, but it's obvious that, of course, it's talking about, it's a conclusion to the previous topic. It's a conclusion to the previous passage, except the Natsiv actually sees this as being an introduction to the next passage, and in a very interesting way. So the Natsiv says, this mitzvah, Shemartem Mitzvotai, has got particular relevance to the Moadei Hashem, to the Chagim. Fu'al pi shekatuf b'tshuvat ha-go'onim b'shem tshuvat Rav Hai, based on a teshuvah of the go'onim in the name of Rav Hai Gaon. Now the Netziv had a particular interest in the go'onim. The go'onic literature has never really taken, an important place on the Jewish book, the rabbinic bookshelf. There's an awareness of the Shiltot, the Gaonic literature, but it was never paid that much serious attention to until the Netziv came along, and then the Netziv wrote on the Shiltot of Rav Achai Gaon that sparked some interest in the Gaonim. I don't think it sort of carried on. I don't know that people really learn the works of the Gaonim so much. But it's not surprising that the Siv is referring to the Gaonim. What did this tshuva of the Gaonim say in the name of Rav Hai Gaon? Sal, le'inyan yom tesheni shel galuyot. This pasuk u'shmartem mitzvotai v'asitem otam is a reference to the second day of Yom Tov observed in the diaspora. I knew somebody wouldn't like it. Shanavim tzivu et Yisrael lasot kein. That's that this goes back to the times of the Nevi'im. That's even got sort of at least an oblique reference in Chumash. The Kachaya Yecheskel Hanavi v'davni elosim. That Rav Hai was asserting that in actual fact, Yecheskel and Daniel, when they were in Galut, they kept 2 days Yom Tov. The Siyem Rav Hai Gal Mazar Lashon. What did Rav Hai Gaon say? V'shem amimot yashav bin nun kachin higet kol hayotzim umishtahim b'chutz laretz lasot kein. This might even go back to the time of Yehoshua bin Nun to keep second day Yom Tov if you're in chutz laretz. V'chol zeh b'vadai merumaz b'torah. Rav Hai Gaon said this must be, you can't just introduce a new second day Yom Tov if there's no hint at it whatsoever in the Torah. Now if you think about it, second day Yom Tov is a very strange notion. That's, everybody wants another day off work. Okay, so we understand that. But, the notion that, in the Torah it says, b'chamishasar yom lachodesh harishon. On the 15th of the first month, that's Yom Tov. Right? We come to shul on the 16th, and we say, v'yom chagam atzot hazeh, mekadish Yisrael v'hazmanim. We say all the brachot, right? It's bizarre, It's not Yom Tov. That's, how can we get away with keeping second day Yom Tov? And don't worry, I will put your mind at rest. I'll tell you how you can get away with keeping it. Right? So the traditional answer based on the Gemara is always that, you know, that's minhag avotechem b'yedchem. This is the minhag that you have from your ancestors, and there's a concern that maybe sometime in the future that there'd be confusion again. So the people in Chutz La'aretz keep second day Yom Tov. Okay, fine, you keep second day Yom Tov. Okay, don't do any malacha. You know, okay, wave the lulav. That's eat matzah. You know, but to turn it into a Yom Tov, have a haftarah, say the brachot of, you know, say the brachot on second day Rosh Hashanah, the brachot on blowing the shofar, when it's not Yom Tov, how can you do it? So for it to be legitimate, there must be that some remez in Chumash. That's what he's saying. Because really, if you look at it from an absolute halachic perspective, then, you know, outside in the Galut, where they weren't sure, you know, in the days of when they were Makadesh al Piha Re'iya, when they sanctified the new moon by witnesses, so strict halachic logic would dictate that, you know, you don't need to worry about maybe there was an extra day in Adar or Elul, and therefore the Yom Tov's been pushed off a day. Mishum shal pi rov hei machaserim. In most cases, it's not like that, and you can follow the rov. V'teda she'en safek mamash, that's, and it's not a real safek, because if it was a real safek, I'll tell you, she'arei no agin safek diyomei l'inyan sfirata omer. Nobody worries about it being a safek as far as sfirata omer is concerned. Nobody says that tonight we should say, last night was the 31st night and last night was the 30th night. I haven't yet counted, so that's why I have to say it that way. Nobody says, you know, you worry about that. That's even though that according to some poskim, it's a mitzvah min ha-Torah, that's to count as Sfirat HaOmer nowadays. And Mishum Sheyeba says, Ziluta Yom Tov Shel Atzeret Lo Tiknu. So we say that, you know, it's only because of Ziluta Atzeret that it's, it would be not nice for Shavuot. It would, you know, you get to Shavuot and the implication would be maybe you've got the wrong day because, yes, last night I counted 49 or 48. Yes, but it would be an insult to the first day of you. It would be casting aspersions on the first day.
Also, we don't keep 2 days Pesach Sheni.
We don't. You're right. You're right. That's, well, for the members of the Tachanun Preservation Society, that's, we do keep 2 days. That's, we don't keep 2 days Yom Kippur either. That's, because we can, you know, just follow the Rav. Most years it's chaser, there isn't an extra day. So why is it, you know, if we can get away with not keeping extra days of Sfirat HaOmer, if we can get away without keeping that 2 days Yom Kippur, that shows there isn't a real concern that we've got the wrong day. In which case, why do we have 2 days Yom Tov? Nevertheless, with the majority of the chagim, they did apply the principle of maybe a safek, mishum shmira yatera, because of being extra careful. And that's why the shi'iltot of Gaonic work says, vasusyag la'Torah. That's, what does it mean, vasusyag la'Torah? Make a safeguard for the Torah. Vazeniklal azharazu kan. That's why this is included here. That's Shmartem mitzvotai vasitem mitzvotai. You should put protective measures around my mitzvot. And that's an introduction to the parasha of the Mo'adot. So, the Netziv, based on Rav Haigaon, is saying that Shmartem mitzvotai is really a command from the Torah to keep second day Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. He's not getting into the question of a tourist in Eretz Israel keeping 2 days Yom Tov. That's a subject for another time, and I don't want any friends. But certainly in Chutz La'aretz, it's interesting, he's saying that we've got some reference there. Turn over the page, and we will look at the last mitzvah that appears prior to the Parashat HaMo'adot. The last mitzvah, or two mitzvot really, is V'lo techallelu et shem kodshi. You shouldn't desecrate or profane my sacred name. V'nikdash ti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, and I will be sanctified amongst B'nai Israel, and Adonai Mekadoshchem, I am Hashem who sanctifies you. This is two mitzvot, opposite sides of the same coin, the mitzvot of Chilul Hashem, or not to create a Chilul Hashem, and the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So there are two ways of applying these mitzvot, both of which are very sublime in their own way. That's one case is in terms of the ultimate sacrifice. That's v'lotchalu et shein kodshi, means that if you're called on to break the mitzvot as a form of anti-Semitic abuse, then don't do it. V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, and even if you have to give up your life, then I'll be sanctified amongst b'nei Yisrael. That is very sublime for reasons that we can clearly understand. And again, there's lots of halakhic discussion, the 8th parak of Masechet Sanhedrin, as you know, what circumstances the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, dying on Kiddush Hashem apply, etc., etc. Even discussion in the Achronim, what bracha do you say on Kiddush Hashem? What's the nusach of the bracha? Is it al Kiddush Hashem or l'kadeshet shemo barabim? To sanctify Hashem's name in public. They always tell, in yeshiva, they always tell the joke about the yeshiva bocher who was being chased by Cossacks. And they're about to shoot him. And the Cossack, they say, oh, this, and they all run away. And he goes, he doesn't want a hashtag after the bracha. That's the very yeshivish way of learning the sugya. The other way of understanding the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, also in the Gemara and the Rambam, is it means that behaving in a way that people will admire you for being a frum Jew, and not behaving in a way that people will look down on you for being a frum Jew. And that's also very sublime. The notion that you can, create a Kiddush Hashem, it doesn't need to be by giving the ultimate sacrifice. You can actually create a Kiddush Hashem just by being a good person. And that's very, very significant. But let's look at what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has to say. He refers us to the Rambam. I'm Baramam Shekatav Zelashono. Kol Beit Yisrael, so the entire Jewish community, is Mutsuvin al Kiddush Hashem Hagadol Hazeh, is commanded on the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying Hashem's great name. Ad Kan Shono, that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says this is a mitzvah on Kol Beit Yisrael, all Jews. But Mashe Katav Kol Beit Yisrael, so what does he mean when he says Kol Beit Yisrael? That's an unusual expression in the Rambam. Kivein Rabot Afilu Ketanim. The Rambam is including even Ketanim, even minors. Now that's strange, because generally speaking, minors don't have a mitzvah, don't have to do mitzvot. So we understand, we saw Emov Amanta, that I'm not allowed to feed treif to my kids. But how can I say that the mitzvah of V'nikdash Dibetok B'nei Israel applies also to Katanim? How can I demand from a Katan, who's not bound by the mitzvot, that he has to sacrifice his life? It's a mitzvah of V'nikdash Di. Why do they have to keep the mitzvah of V'nikdash Di? There's 613 mitzvot in the Torah. A Katan doesn't have to keep the 613 mitzvot in the Torah. So why is a Katan obliged with the mitzvah of Nikdashti? How do we know it includes Katanim? Kedikhtir, a pasuk that we're familiar with, Yavarechet Beit Yisrael, HaKatanim Im HaGadolim. And we darshan that's referring to the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, that's HaKatanim Im HaGadolim. V'atav Nireli. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, he thinks the reason is because Midulokatov, it's not written in the Pasuk, Takdishu et Shemi, okay, you shall sanctify my name. If that was the case, the Pasuk would only be addressing those who are giving up their lives. Seeing as it says, in the Hitpael sense, v'nikdashti, I will become sanctified. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol ho hanifal. It's happening to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. It's not a mitzvah to sanctify Hashem. It's rather a mitzvah that Hashem should be sanctified. And therefore everybody's included that. If it said you must sanctify Hashem, then that would exclude Ketanim because they're not obliged with the mitzvot. But here it's, V'nikdashti, I will be sanctified in whatever way it is. V'amarti, he says, in actual fact, we've got a pasuk that the Rambam brings in Sefer Mitzvot, which reflects this. Shevikra di Yishaya pasuk, that's in Yishaya, kibiroto yaladav yakdishu shumi, v'kdishu et kadosh Yaakov. It's his children who will sanctify my name and will sanctify the Holy One of Yaakov. And then he goes on in the next paragraph to relate this to, you know, certainly what happened in medieval times, you know, in the Crusades and the like, that's where there are recorded cases of the adults sacrificing their children. You know, the Clifford's Tower in the York massacre.
In the news this week.
Yes. Be a great one listed.
That's
built something near it.
Yeah,
right.
I think it's not going to go, but I think
right. Okay. So in any event, you know, Clifford's Tower. That's a Masada, very famously. That's the adults. Killed the children and then killed themselves. What right do you have to kill your children, even in the case of Kiddush Hashem? So the truth is, there's a whole discussion amongst the Rishonim and different opinions as to whether or not that was halachically justifiable or not halachically justifiable. But according to those who say that it's halachically justifiable, we could add to their proofs that's this Rambam and the understanding of a v'nikdashti, because the mitzvah isn't to that you should sanctify Hashem's name, but it's v'nikdashti, is that Hashem's name needs to be sanctified. Let's move on now to the Parashat HaMoadot. And this is the laning that we lane, that's second day Pesach, first 2 days Sukkot. So we're, quite familiar with it. That's from the Chagim. And it deals with the yearly cycle of Chagim. However, we have introductory verses by Daber Adonai Moshe L'Emor. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem. So, here we've got Daber v'amarta. Our question earlier on was Emor v'amarta. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem. Speak to b'nei Yisrael and say to them, Mo'adei Adonai asher tikru otam mikra'i kodesh. The appointed times of Hashem, which you shall proclaim them to be mikra'i kodesh, elahem mo'adai. These are my fixed times. Now, the big question is, what do we mean by this term Mikra'e Kodesh? Mikra'e Kodesh is one of those terms which the Routledge Machzor translates as a holy convocation, which is as helpful, or possibly less helpful, than the term Mikra'e Kodesh. A holy convocation is, type of phrase that, unless you're Jewish and have a Routledge Machzor, you would never use that in phylacteries. V'nireli b'kavanat ha-matargamim. So it seems to me what the translators have in mind. Shu milashon mikra. Mikra is an event. A mikra is an event, something that happens. Asher horato hachana v'hazmana gam l'davar miuchad v'kavua. It's sometimes the term mikra just means something which is by chance, but it can also mean something which is designated, a designated event. V'hikritem lachem arim, for example, with regard to the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge, right? The pasuk says v'hikritem lachem arim. That's, and how do we translate Targum? What the Targum Unculus says, but tazminun, it means you shall designate or prepare for yourselves. Cities of refuge. So mikra means to prepare something. The chain perish Rashi l'shon hachana v'azmana, and Rashi also says the same thing. And more hikra Hashem lefanai hechin v'hizmin. Okay, Hashem made this happen. Chainik dish kruav. That's Targumor Araimazam Nohi. So he's got various examples of how the word mikre can mean something which is prepared for in advance. Therefore, Perush Mikra Kodesh. What does it mean, Mikra Kodesh? It means Hachana v'hazmana el HaKodesh. Preparing yourself, getting yourself ready for this holy event. Ritzon Olomar, meaning Sheyachin Ha'adam et Libo Kedushat Yamim Eile. Person should prepare himself intellectually and emotionally for the Kedusha of these days. And he should let them make an impact on his soul. They should affect him in some way. And he should think about what these festivals are about, what they're for. So what Rabbi Yaakov C. Micklenburg is telling us is this phrase, Mikrai Kodesh, means these are holy days for which you need to prepare in advance so that you can, properly appreciate it. And, I know from, my own experience, as a shul rabbi, so kal vachomer, for the rest of you, sometimes, rush home on, Erev Yom Tov, you've been working extra hard, a few days before Yom Tov because, you're not in the office on Yom Tov. You rush home, Erev Yom Tov. You've barely had the chance to think about, what Yom Tov is all about. But what he's saying is Mikrai Kodesh actually means that you need to internalize the lessons of the day. And in actual fact, get ready for it so that when you get to shul on Shavuot night, it's not just, now wait, did we get enough coal for the barbecue on second day? But Shavuot is Man Matan Toratenu, and that's what I want to engage with over the course of this festival. Let's turn the page. So, what's our introduction to the Chagim? This is the Chagim, and our introduction is Shabbat. 6 days teaseh melacha. 6 days melacha shall be done. V'yom ha-shvi'i, Shabbat on Mikra Kodesh. V'yeh Sabbath to Sabbath, it's a holy convocation. Kol melacha lo ta'asu. You shan't do any melacha. Shabbat hi l'Adonai b'chol moshevoteichem. It's a Sabbath for Hashem in all your habitations. Why are we dealing with Shabbat in the context of the Chagim? A lovely explanation of the Vilna Gaon. Look at the Vilna Gaon. Ubier gam ma'amar ki gam ma'amar sheshet yamim ta'aseh melacha. Even this ta'aseh melacha, this opening phrase that for 6 days work shall be done. Medaber rak min ha'moadot. It's not talking about the moed, the Shabbat. It's talking about the moadot. Ki ha'moadim b'chlal heimah shisha yamim. There are actually 6 days, 6 festive days in the Jewish calendar. V'heim, shnei yamim b'chag ha-Pesach, 2 days of Pesach, one at either end. V'yom ha-Rishon mikra kodesh, v'yom ha-Shvi'i mikra kodesh. Yom echad Shavuot, 1 day of Shavuot. Shnei yamim b'sukkot, 2 days of Sukkot, one at the end and one of Shmini Atzeret. V'yom ha-Rishon mikra kodesh, v'yom ha-Shmini mikra kodesh. V'rosh Hashanah yom echad and 1 day of Rosh Hashanah. That's 6. In came Heimash Shishayamim. That's great, that's 6 days. Problem, there's a 7th Yom Tov. What's the 7th day of Yom Tov? Yom Kippur. V'yesh od Yom Echad Yom HaKippurim. The Gra didn't forget about Yom Kippur. Aval eino do'enti no ke'ilu sheshet hayamim. The dinim of Yom Kippur are different to the dinim of the other 6 festive days. On regular Yom Tov, you can do some type of melacha. You can cook. You can cook on Shavuot. Nevashel v'lefot. V'yom ha-kippurim, dinok Shabbat shegam ze'asor. So Yom Kippur, however, is like Shabbat, when you can't do any type of melacha. Now look back at the Pasuk. We can understand it according to the way the Graz told us. Sheshet yamim te'aseh melacha. 6 days of these Yom Tovim that I'm going to talk to you about. Malacha of some sort can be done. Ayochel nefesh. Vayom ha-shvi'i, but the 7th one, Yom Kippur, Shabbat Shabbaton Mikra Kodesh. That is a Shabbat Shabbaton. And therefore, the Gra says that Pasuk is not talking at all about, it's not talking at all about the mitzvah of Shabbat.
I keep in 2 days Yom Tov, though, you're completely throwing that across again.
Yes, but only according to the Graz interpretation.
He has
now, listen, you've got a 3 day Yom Tov coming up, something to look forward to. That's, I never understand how people groan and moan about 3 days Yom Tov. 3 days of Kedusha. What more could a person want? That's, we'll skip the next passage and we'll look at the bottom one on this page. Sfirat HaOmer. We're in the period of Sfirat HaOmer. It always strikes me, you know, it's just one of those flukes of the calendar, if there's such a thing, that always Parashat Emor, that's we read during Sfirat HaOmer, and very, very often, as in this week, you know, even round about Lag BaOmer. As in fact, this week, you know, this year, Lag BaOmer is sandwiched between last week's Parashat of V'ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, and Rabbi Akiva is saying it's the Klal Gadol BaTorah, and Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim dying, and the mitzvah Sfirat HaOmer this week, that's in Parshat Emor. Usfartem lachem mimacharat haShabbat, so you shall count for yourselves from the day following the Sabbath, miyom aviyachem etom atnufa, from the day that you bring the Omer wave offering, sheva Shabbatot mimot tiyena, 7 complete weeks there shall be. So lots of, you know, questions on this pasuk, primarily the Mocharat HaShabbat. The Sadducees, they said that Mocharat HaShabbat meant a Sunday. You start counting Sfirat HaOmer from a Sunday. Of course, the Pharisees and Rabbinic Judaism starts counting, understands that the Shabbat is meaning first day Pesach. But HaKtav HaKabbalah is wondering why the verb that we use here is Sfartem Lachem. That's why, you know, there's another way that you can say to count. What's another way of saying to count in Hebrew?
Limnot.
Yeah, limnot. Okay, that's limnot jamim came on that. It's biblical Hebrew. So lispor is obviously related to mispar, the word for a number. But limnot is related to the word minyan, which is also a total or counting. So why has this word of Sfartem been used, this verb, rather than limnot? That's his question. Minat lachem einot tosefet she'im bo tzorech, kumo she'ire b'tkilat ha'machashava. Now the fact that it says Sfartem lachem, for you, the lachem isn't just thrown in there for no particular reason, she'inu ela tikun ha'lashon bilvad, just for grammatical reasons. That's what it's really all about, this mitzvah. It's teaching us that counting these 7 weeks shouldn't be livchinat kamut misparam ba'atzmutam bilvad. It's not just about reaching a particular total, kasher yachshavu ha'hamoniim, like the great unwashed think. The purpose of this sphera is that a person should give some consideration to how he's living his life. Like when Avraham was told, Lech lecha me'artzcha, it wasn't just lech, but it was lech lecha. Go for yourself, you know, take this to heart. It's clearly got something to do exactly with Avraham. And that's why here also it says, Usfartem lachem, yirmoz b'minat hakinui l'toelet nefesh adam ul'tovato. The fact that it's saying lachem is telling you this is all to do with that improving us, giving us the opportunity to purify ourselves as much as we can during these 7 weeks. From all bad thoughts and bad forms of behavior. So what he's saying is that Usfartem, it's not just Usfartem, just count, it's Usfartem Lachem, make this meaningful for you. And he doesn't quite say this, but it occurred to me that Svartam lachem, that what lispor can mean to count, but what other lispor, you've got a very similar verb, lesaper. What does lesaper mean? To tell something, sipur yitziat Mitzrayim, to tell a story. So as far if it was limnot for Sfirat HaOmer, yeah, then that would be perhaps, you know, just, you know, discrete numbers, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, lispor means that there's a narrative that goes with it. It's not just a number, but maybe there's a narrative that goes with it. Sfartem lachem, you've got to make that narrative relevant to you. You've got to make it speak to you. V'itachin on sheklala Torah b'milat sfartem inyan hatahara v'azikuch. And he says it's also possible this term sfartem includes with it a notion of purifying something. Milishon Even sapir, the Yechezkel. In Yechezkel, it refers to an even sapir. An even sapir is like a sapphire. V'livnata sapir. That's a very clear stone. It's something which is looks pure. That's, and he goes on to give other examples as well. The Sfartem Lachem, he says, so therefore, Sfartem Lachem means, you should, it doesn't just mean you should count, it's also got a dual meaning. Sfartem Lachem, you should purify yourselves during this time of year, which is part of what we try and do during Sfirat HaOmer. We'll finish off with a kind of similar idea on to do with Rosh Hashanah from the Netziv. We'll just say this outside. The Pasuk tells us with Rosh Hashanah, Taber ben Yisrael Emor, Bachodesh Hashvi Be'erchad Lachodesh, seventh month, first of the month, Yelachem Shabbaton, it shall be a Sabbath for you, Zichron Teruah Mikra Kodesh. A Teruah memorial, Mikra Kodesh, that famous holy convocation again. A number of Mepharshim point out, the acronym, that it's strange, there's no mention in the Torah anywhere of Rosh Hashanah being the beginning of the Tshuva period. You know, if you look in the Chumash, you know, Yom Kippur is a day of Kapara. That's Kivayom Hazeicha Peralechem, and it's a day of Initemet Nashotichem, that you shall afflict your souls. Rosh Hashanah, from a Torah perspective, just seems to be another Yom Tov. It's the beginning of the year in a certain sense. It's a Zichron Teruah, it's a Yom Teruah, but it's not more than, there's no reference to it being what we know as Rosh Hashanah. There's no reference to, you know, clothing the shul in white and saying Avinu Malkeinu, basically. Where do we get that from? So the Netziv says we get it from the fact that the Torah doesn't call Rosh Hashanah only a Yom Teruah. Parashat Pinchas, it calls it a Yom Teruah. But here it calls it a Zichron Teruah. Zichron Teruah means internalizing the message, thinking about what the Teruah is trying to tell us. Teruah from the Shon Hitorarut, you know, an awakening. That's why it says Zichron Teruah. They could have just said in both cases it's a Yom Teruah. Why did it say in one case call it a Zichron Teruah? Because Rosh Hashanah is more than just doing the action, but it's internalizing the message. You know, it's like, you know, Pesach night when we eat the matzah, I don't think there's any requirement while I'm eating the matzah to think about, you know, how the Bnei Israel came out of Mitzrayim. And we've got an obligation, you know, Rabban Gamliel says you should talk about it. But, you know, if you didn't, you'd still fulfill the mitzvah. It's not an independent mitzvah. Whereas here we've got Zichron Teruah, which seems to be, I don't know if it's independent or part and parcel of Yom Teruah, but clearly, the Siv is saying that's clearly an important part of what Rosh Hashanah is, the Zikaron element of the day. Okay, Ad Kan with Parashat Emor. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, Bahar and Bechukotai. Thank you all for your...